Intervju Radija Študent.
Dobar dan, Jure, pred mikrofonom, lepo pozdravljeni v intervjuju Radija Študent. Danes z prav posebnimi gosti, in sicer se za zaključni dogodek, Andreja, imam prav, zaključni dogodek elektrolize v tej sezoni, se pravi spomladanski zaključni dogodek v klubu Channel Zero na Metelkovi, se danes pripravlja prav posebna detroitska fešta z kolektivom Altodyne. Altodyne sta v naš studio prispela direkt iz Graca, še prej so igrali na Dunaju, tako da jih bomo z veseljem vprašali, kaj se jim trenutno dogaja. Gre pa za tiste, ki jih ne poznate, pravzaprav za legendarni kolektiv, ki je sicer ustanovil Dennis Richardson, in ki nekako za svojo anonimnostjo in pa militantno, elektroidno in tehnoidno estetiko pravzaprav že od zgodnjih 90-ih ali pa sredine 90-ih nekako parira tistim največjim imenom detroitske scene, ki pa jih brezdvomno poznamo in ki jih je tudi elektroliza pravzaprav v zadnjem času kar zelo konsistentno vozila v naše kraje. Takole, zdaj pa preklapljamo v angleščino. Hello guys, welcome to Ljubljana.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you for coming in on such short notice. You just came from Graz. How was in Austria?
That was great. That was great.
Yeah,
Graz
was awesome.
So Graz and Vienna, yeah. Probably in Vienna you have this really steady following anyway, because they've known Altodyne for ages now.
Mm-hmm.
So how is Vienna? Still the old fans, maybe? The old electro scene still active in Vienna?
I think so, yeah. We met a couple people we knew already, so.
Because actually the first time I heard about Altodyne was probably 96 on this really obscure compilation by the label called Sabotage, which was really exotic, and in this way we discovered, you know, Ectomorph, Le Car, all that sort of stuff. So what associated you, since you're coming from Vienna, what associated you with Vienna in the middle of the 90s?
That was actually a release that it was one of those random things when I guess they approached a couple of friends of mine, and they didn't want to bother with them, so they basically gave X if I wanted to put a release or release a song on track on one of on these records. Yeah, sure, okay. And that's how that happened.
And a couple of gigs, as far as I'm told.
I did one as a result, but that was so long ago. I barely remember.
Come on, that's 20 years ago,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a long time. So who's in Altodyne right now? I mean, I know it's a really shady, anonymous collective all the time. Who's the member? How many members are there?
Right now it's just myself and Frank.
Mm-hmm.
That has changed over the years, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. That always changes a bit?
No. I think in the beginning we had another member, or there was another member, and then that didn't work out too well. But it went from two to then Frank came in, then it was three. And then when the other guy left, it was just me and Frank now.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of Europe, how much touring have you done in Europe in the late, I don't know, 5 years, maybe 10 years? Because we haven't heard much from you.
Yeah.
Just the occasional 12-inch, the occasional album, that's it.
We normally do two tours a year. So normally like in spring and then fall or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to do at least four cities, maybe five. Last year was five, I think.
Yeah.
We did France, Clermont-Ferrand, France, Rotterdam, Dublin, Glasgow, and Sweden.
Yeah.
So it's quite big and extensive this time, probably.
Well, no, it's four cities now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or so four gigs, yeah.
Yeah, last year it was just those, all the gigs were within a short period of time. Yeah. Not this one here, it's spread out. Yeah. It's a little bit more relaxing, but last year it was like almost every day we were plane, train, or automobile somewhere.
What does that mean to you in terms of a live act, basically? I mean, you don't do it so often. How much does a tour mean for you, even like in an artistic way? How much does it, you know, get you to do new stuff, get new ideas, because you're interacting with someone, basically? Sure. I mean, how much does it give back to you?
You know, it's twofold for me. One is you get to see fans, and you get to see people that really like your music, and it's just another way of the concept of what you're trying to do. Now they can actually, instead of hearing it, they can actually see it. And then another aspect is it does the crowd size and all, really, it's not as important as just to see people that really like the music, you know, that you do, and they're there. So if it's a crowd of 20, but this 20 fans, that's awesome, versus a crowd of 200, and out of that 200, 10 people are, you know, that's not as cool, you know. But
it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality.
So it's not trying to entertain like in a typical electronic live act situation, but trying to convince the ones, well, not even trying to convince the ones that are already convinced, basically. So yeah, but that's kind of the tactics with the releases also with Ultradyne. I mean, it's one LP, what, 8, 10,
yeah,
10, 12 inches, and like a handful of remixes. So that's it. Why this really select issues with the 12 inches?
I don't think if you, well, I'll put it to, we don't do this to make money. I have a real job, he has a real job. So money is never the driving factor. It's always the concept. And then it's a lot of it is timing. Because every record has its own concept behind it, or something that at that moment in our lives, we're going through something that created this music, and then we put a record out. So there's never, and you know, the records come out on our own label, so it's never a rush. You know, if it takes 3 years to put out another record,
it just takes 3 years.
And then, you know, if you're always constantly releasing records, and this is just my opinion, if you're always constantly releasing records, always, it's just the point of your doing music is now just to, it's almost like someone that always talks. Eventually you block them out, you don't really pay attention to them. But if a person doesn't really talk and then they say something, everybody, whoa, he said something, he spoke, and then they tend to listen more. That's my take on releasing things.
Because this is one thing I read, and it seemed really funny, and somehow it was logical. I was reading an interview with your basically your fellow citizen, Carl Craig, and he said he has to issue a record like every 2 months just to say, I'm still here, you know, it's still happening. So it's nice to hear something coming from the other side, which does have a lot more message than Carl Craig's music, basically, and has a lot of more profound statements in it. So you tend to make a statement with every record. So what causes this statement? Was it the political situation? Was it the state of the world? Was it, I don't know, in the end, Detroit going bankrupt, basically, or the stuff that's changing in Detroit?
Oddly enough, no, it's more personal. It's not a global thing. It's just life in general. I'm a father, he's a father. For me, it could be anything as dealing with something with my kids that really bothers me. And I might start, that might start music. Or it could be something, a long-term experience in my life that is, a hardship or something like that. But it's going on for a long period of time, and then that may get my mind on thinking about a concept, music concepts, and then that's what happens.
Just so, getting there.
Yeah. Yep.
So, how much parts of the music comes from who? From both of you? Basically, do you work together or do you just exchange ideas?
It's both. We exchange ideas, work on songs together, but it can also be that one of us creates a song and that becomes an Ultradyne song. Or if one creates a song, the other says, hey, I feel that, and then starts working on it too.
So in a way it's a logical process that brings you to results. In all the time that Ultradyne has been active, you've made a couple of really strong statements about Ultradyne being the ultimate machine, the machine of ideas and stuff like that. But you haven't really made any, let's say, ideological stories like Drexia and all those crossing the Black Atlantic and stuff like that. I mean, and in a way, you performing anonymous with masks, with stuff on your head that conceal your identity, I mean, does that imply that the music speaks for itself, so that that's the only thing people should listen to? Or does it bring in the whole package? I mean, I see the record, I see what's written on the record, I see all the messages, maybe something's engraved on the vinyl that brings a message and we should be really careful about it.
And that's a good point, because that's basically the message, or an idea is not static. A machine of ideas is never static. And then after it becomes an idea, if it becomes static after it becomes an idea, then it's going to be dated. It's going to have its end. So to that point, I don't want to put an idea out. I don't want to say, this is my idea. Well, that's for you to decide. That's for him to decide. That's what makes this machine. It's your idea, or comes from what you hear, and then you go off and create, or because of your mindset now, you go and generate other things, and those things generate other things, and so on. And likewise with him. But if I were to only say, this is, you know, our music is about this here, then you can only think of our music in that context. I don't think that's too progressive. I think to keep it open, where anyone can develop an idea from anything. So that goes through all the whole process of making the music, from the music to the label art, things like that. All of that, everything will have something that will cause some type of idea or thought to be generated.
Do you guys still reside in Detroit?
No, I do.
You do?
Yeah. I'm from the Netherlands.
Aha. So yeah, obviously another strong electro capital, basically. So that's, I mean, has the change in Detroit influenced, I mean, your personal life? Probably, obviously, because it's kind of like breaking down the system of the city. I mean, how much does it influence that in your music, basically?
And not much. Not much at all. It that's something that's not... globally, it probably sounds a lot worse than it is.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
I mean, it's not that the buildings are falling down.
Yeah, no,
you still
no.
live there. You
yeah,
still,
yeah,
you
know. And when you hear the word bankrupt, you think just utter financial ruin. And that is not the case. Bankruptcy is just for this situation, is just a code word to allow the government to do other things that they could not have done if they were not bankrupt. So that process is just a formality for our government to get to an end. And in that end, I think they want to revitalize the city. It's not, you know, it's not bad. Like when, you know, someone files for bankruptcy, they're, oh my God, they're broke. No, it's not like that.
It's always a conspiracy of some sort.
Yeah.
But do you still have a following in Detroit? I remember each and every time I spoke to someone from Detroit, like a producer or a DJ, they say there's not enough audience in Detroit. We have problems connecting with the local public. I mean, there's so much music, so much creativity coming out of the city, but sometimes I get the feeling that the city itself is not really appreciating it. So it's more of a overseas thing, or yeah, maybe somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, that's true. You don't have, for electronic music, I think our city has just, I don't want to say outgrown it, or it just never really latched onto it. Different cities are known for different types of music. Like you go to Boston, you get ska or something like that. In Massachusetts, you get that over there. LA, you might get, different type. Miami, you get Miami bass type things, back in the 90s or whatever. Detroit is more so becoming a hard rock. So if I was a hard rock act, I'd be okay. Electronic music now. Yes,
but compared to Europe, it, the electronic music didn't hit it off as it did over here in Europe.
Mm. Yeah. But it's really funny because when I just revisited your discography, one of the first records was on Warp. Actually, the first one is equally on Warp. That's the same time Draxia had a EP on Warp, and that was a big, like a conceivement point for Detroit Electro almost. Well, it was conceived longer ago and with different groups and different, probably different influences, but those were like two deciding EPs that put Detroit Electro basically on the map. So what kind of started the whole thing beside, well, you had funk, you had black music, you had rock, you had stuff like that, and then you had this early electro, early techno stuff. Did you hit it off with European music? Because lots of people cite, I don't know, Front 242 maybe, or the...
Well, when I first started, I was never into electronic music. I started in heavy metal. That was hard rock and heavy metal. and then it moved into... I was in high school, and I first heard Depeche Mode. And I was like, what kind of instruments are these guys using? That was kind of weird and crazy. So I started casually trying to find out, they use these keyboards and, blah, blah, blah. Well, I could never afford that type of stuff. Never. My family could never afford that type of stuff. So, but when we were younger, I was in middle school, Jeff Mills got on the radio, and he would play Kraftwerk, and I had never heard Kraftwerk before, so when I hear this stuff, it was like, oh, that's cool, and we breakdance to it. And that's what happened, that's how it all really started. He had this radio show, there's a couple of other, like two or three other DJs that played that same type of music, and it was like, these odd hours, like 8 o'clock in the evening or something like that, so everybody would be glued to the radio station to hear this music, and then we go to school the next day and we talk about it. And that's what, for a lot of people in that our generation in the city, we became familiar with it, and then a lot of more of us really try to duplicate what we were hearing, and I think that's how things started really taking off.
And then there's the matter of making your own sound.
Yeah.
what was the breaking point here? Because there's always a danger to become this really typical... Well, actually, there is a typical Detroit sound, but in a way, there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you break away from Draxia and from, I don't know, let's say the electro moments of Underground Resistance or people like that, and make your own way? Basically, with the same tactics, like being anonymous, being really militant, being kind of with an industrial imaginary and stuff like that.
I think just the environment contributed to that, but also it was, we would all sit around and talk about this. We just all talk about exchange philosophies on making music, and I come from, like I said, guitars and stuff like that. So synthesizing, to me, when you look at a guitar and I can have 16 pedals and a combination of these pedals, I can get a sound out of a guitar. With a synthesizer, it's knobs and stuff like that. And I didn't know what a knob did. I didn't know what a VCF did. I didn't know what a VCA or a tech envelope, I didn't know what that meant. So we'd sit around and flick knobs. And then if something sounded cool or sounded unusual, that's what we went with. So everyone had a specific method. I started doing this. I didn't have a method, but I didn't want music to sound like what they were doing because, you know, we're all trying to be individuals. So the sound would, you know, we would record things, and if we played it back and then played, you know, one of your songs or something, then that sounds too much like his. Scrap that, and we go to something else, you know, until we caught something that I never heard that before. That sounds cool. Then that became a song.
It was basically what we still do.
We don't
want to sound like anything else.
And Frank, for you being Dutch, obviously there's a really rich electro scene which most people are not really familiar with in the Netherlands. Some of my favorite acts come from there. So what's your background basically?
Well, radio. There was this one show called the Soul Show in Holland, and he played well, soul of course, but also more housey stuff, techno maybe, and that's how I got into music. Then the in Holland the quote wrong unquote period started with the Euro sound and stuff like that, and then I felt like I could do better, so I started saving up for my synth, my first synth. That's how I started making music.
Do you guys tend to stay with analog equipment, or do you tend to go computers, digital stuff like that?
I think just this day and age, you can't stick with this analog. I mean, it sounds good and all, but realistically, monetarily wise, from as far as it goes for repair and upkeep on these instruments, if you use them as often as we use them, it's just not possible to maintain them. It's just, you know, it's not. So software has its uses. Analog gear has its uses. So we don't stick to any specific type of instrument. It's just every instrument is an instrument.
Yeah, whatever's the current idea, basically. When I was thinking about it, the whole electro sound has been around for a really, really long time. How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it new? Because in a way, it's the same thing with techno, basically. I've been talking to a lot of people about this, but for me, techno never fails to amaze me, because although it's in a way it's a cliche, it's the same kind of bank of sounds, but it still manifests itself, it reinvents itself, and it's always kind of a new sound. Do you think it's the same with electro, being around even longer than techno, basically?
I would say that's partially the case, but I think music evolves naturally. That's just the natural selection or natural progress of anything. It's going to change to a certain degree. I mean, you look at any type of music form, you talk about rock and roll or things like that, it's the same thing. Rock and roll of the 50s versus rock and roll of the 80s and versus rock and roll of, you know, 2000s. It still changes, but the concept or the basic elements is still the same. It's the same with this type of music here. It's just the presentation of that, of those things. How do you present it?
And it's we get older, get more experienced, start to appreciate other styles of music, and get ideas from that, and integrated into our sound.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a bit about your label, Paigao Movement. It's been around for a long time. What's the tactics with the label? I mean, that's the same as your live acts and your records as Ultradyne. It's been really a select bunch of releases. Is anything new coming out? Is anything from Ultradyne coming out in the near future? if it's not too much of a secret.
There will be Ultradyne. That is, Paigao Movement is the only label that will release Ultradyne. I'll say that. All right. Now there are other projects that we may do conceptually, one-offs. We did a Majestic 12, and I don't think that's going to be a one-off. I think that's there will be more Majestic 12 releases coming, but so the tactic behind or the plan behind Paigao Movement was it's the label's run by us, it's owned by us, I can do whatever I want, he can do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. Within reason, of course, you know, but yeah. So the politics of shopping a song around to a record label to get them to release, and when they have to consider what they have scheduled to be released, and if your music fits in that schedule some way, good. If it doesn't, then your record may never get released. I find it's counterproductive to the whole music process. So we just totally bypass that. So all of our releases, we finance the release ourselves. Mm-hmm. We shop the release around to distributors ourselves, and we mail the records out ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Sell them online.
Yep, sell them online. Yeah, and then all our mailing and things like that is done by us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that keeps it pure. Although it might be a while before you get your stuff after you order it. But you know, it keeps it so that you have as much as an unadulterated flow of music. Mm-hmm. The concept can come out, it won't be watered down. It's just a concept. So.
Mm-hmm. And I've noticed a complete absence of your tracks on services like iTunes or stuff like that. So you don't do that?
No. We started, I think, with the Majestic 12. That was a digital only.
Yeah.
And after that, that process is a process in itself. Right? I didn't like that process too much. So.
Mm-hmm. It's not so much hands-on, probably. Yeah. So to wrap this up, what can the Ljubljana electro fans expect from you tonight? Is it going to be any unreleased stuff? A look through whatever you've done in the past, or just, you know, your favorites?
Most of it is going to be, well, I wouldn't say most of it. There will be a mixture of older things, unreleased things, and remixed things, remixed, and a good healthy dose of chaos.
Which is always handy,
yeah.
Basically. Guys, thank you for coming into the studio. Have a good one tonight.
Thank you.
Hope we meet again. I mean, this is a good chance to convince Andrea to invite you again. Okay. At one or other occasion if you decide to come. And yeah, have a good one. Hope to see you some other time. Torej, Ultradyne nocoj jih lahko vidite v klubu Channel Zero na Metelkovi. Mi se jih že zelo veselimo, tudi vi bi se jih praviloma mogli. Sliši se zanimivo, tako da upam, da se udeležite v čim večjem številu. Z vami sem bil Jure, skupaj za Ultradyne, in se zdaj prav lepo poslavljam. Čau.
Intervju Radija Študent.